You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. With just 6 weeks to go until the UN mandate authorizing U.S. troops to operate in Iraq expires, Iraq's cabinet has approved a new security pact that sets out a phased withdrawal of U.S. troops through 2011, among other things. Joining us now to talk more about this is New York Times correspondent Stephen Farrell and BBC correspondent Andrew North. They are both joining us from Baghdad. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Stephen, let's start with you. What have the two sides agreed to?
Well, the two sides have agreed that American troops will leave Iraq in 2011 and they'll be out of major Iraqi cities in 2009. And they've agreed on what they can do while they remain, to put it simply, that they effectively need Iraqi permission to do a lot of things that they've been doing until now on their own authority. And that will start as of January the 1st. When the United Nations mandate, which governed the presence of American troops in Iraq, expires.
And, Andrew, these were tense negotiations that have gone on for nearly a year. What were the issues that finally allowed for this agreement that's moving forward?
Yeah, it's taken a lot of negotiation to get to this point. It's been a very sensitive issue here in Iraq because there are some political parties who even now see this as too much of a concession to the Americans. Some are saying that, in effect, it entrenches the U.S. occupation. But I think the key things that finally moved things on were compromises on the Iraqis gaining greater jurisdiction over American troops, the possibility that U.S. soldiers and contractors could be tried in an Iraqi court, although I think that's still very unlikely. And also a ban that has now been put in place on the Americans carrying out any raids on neighboring countries. You may remember just last month there was a U.S. Special Forces raid on neighboring Syria. That was another concern that they had.
In terms of the immunity, Andrew, this has been a very contentious issue, but it almost sounds a little vague when they're saying that U.S. soldiers are still guaranteed immunity except in cases of serious felonies committed while off duty outside their bases.
That's right. I mean, I think it's a compromise they've come up with where there will now be a joint committee that will decide in each case if the Iraqis want to try an American contractor or soldier for a violation committed outside a U.S. base, that they could possibly go before an Iraqi court. But clearly this is a red line issue. It long has been for the Americans all over the world. It's very unlikely that we'll see a soldier tried. But I think the interesting thing will be over contractors. You may remember what happened last year when the Blackwater Security Company, its operatives, shot dead 17 Iraqi civilians in central Baghdad. That caused massive outrage here, even more so when the Prime Minister, he initially tried to throw them out of the country, then discovered he didn't have the power. And I think the Iraqi government certainly in that case, they want to be seen to be gaining more control. And if it was a contractor that shot someone dead, then probably there would be, in future, much more pressure for them to go before an Iraqi court.
And in terms of control, Stephen, this phased out withdrawal certainly sends the message, or I would assume is intending to send the message, that U.S. troops are not going to stay in Iraq forever. Could you outline the phase out?
Yeah, I mean, this is really all about a nation's sense of itself and having control over its own destiny. And that's very much what an Iraqi government, which still operates under the umbrella of the American military, it wants to reestablish control over its own country. It's very, very keen, with elections coming up, that it isn't seen as a lackey of an occupying power, which is certainly how its opponents are going to paint it. So what they have said is, we want you out of the major cities by the middle of next year, and then we want you out of the country by the end of 2011, unless we decide. That's the key thing, that if we want you to stay on, if we decide security isn't good enough, then that's fine, that's our decision. But they were very, very keen on having this couched in terms of our decision and definitively, whereas the Americans are very keen, as this administration has been throughout, on having no set arbitrary deadlines, but having everything contingent on conditions on the ground. So there was an awful lot of talk about very detailed wording in pitching it between no conditions and conditional.
Stephen, this is Catherine Lanford in for John Hockenberry. What sense do you get that this agreement is going to pass in Iraq's parliament?
I think it's very likely. I think the sense we were getting from the American diplomats in the run-up was that Maliki, Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki, wasn't going to put it to parliament until he was sure that he would get it through, because he didn't want to risk embarrassment. So he had a cabinet meeting before. 27 of 28 cabinet ministers who attended said yes, 9 weren't there. Assume they may be mixed, but it looks very likely that it will go through. This is not something — he doesn't have presidential powers, he's a prime minister, he's reliant on other parties, so he has to effectively do the electoral math, and it looks like with the support of the two biggest coalitions, that alone will give him enough. However, they need 138 votes, but what the nation's chief Shia cleric and what the government themselves have said is, we don't want to do this on a majority plus one. We want to do this with consensus. That makes the bar considerably higher. And if the Sunnis kick up enough of a fuss and say, you're railroading this through us, that isn't consensus, and things could start to look a bit sticky.
And they've certainly been...
I think it's interesting, if I could just come in quickly. I think it's interesting because, in fact, there is... we have heard quite a lot of opposition to it, but to some extent, this opposition is a smokescreen. Now, when it comes from people like Muqtada al-Sadr, the anti-American cleric, he is very clearly set against the agreement. But, in fact, many of the others who have spoken out against it, to some extent, are doing so because of local sensitivities. When you talk to them in private, they're in fact, there's a lot more support for the agreement, because it does, in fact, give the Iraqi government much more power over the Americans than they had before.
And when you bring in cleric al-Sadr, he called for protest demonstrations this coming Friday. What's your expectation as to how well that will be attended?
Well, that's going to be interesting, because there have been many times before when he's called demonstrations and then at the last minute has called them off. But he's certainly been speaking out again a bit more loudly in the last few days. And this, in some ways, is a bit of a test of his credibility, to show that he can bring people out onto the streets again. I mean, he's been very quiet really since the surge got underway and he called for a ceasefire for his men. But recently he's come out and said that he's forming a new unit to fight against the occupiers, as he puts it. So this Friday actually is going to be quite interesting to see what happens.
And Stephen, what do you think it means that the Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, he's the most influential Shiite cleric, that he has essentially thrown his support behind this agreement?
It means everything. I spoke to a very senior Shia MP yesterday who said, look, very early on, Syed Sistani told us, these are the conditions I want met, these three conditions, and effectively, don't come back to me until you got these out of the Americans. And he said, on Saturday, we were able to go back to Syed Sistani and say, we have these conditions, not quite 100% as we would want, but we've got them as good as we think we're going to get them. And he signed off on it. I think that Andrew's quite right. Sadr, it will be interesting to see on Friday, but Muqtada al-Sadr is far junior to Ayatollah Sistani in the Shia hierarchy. And I've been to many, many demonstrations in this country over the years. Sadr is getting fewer and fewer people to his demonstrations in recent months than he used to. And yet, the one time I remember Ayatollah Sistani, back about 3 or 4 years ago, didn't like what the Americans were doing, clicked his fingers, and the next day there were hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets, and then he unclicked them and they disappeared. It was completely peaceful, but there's no question who delivers the country in terms of the Shia side of it anyway. It's Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani.
Stephen Farrell, New York Times Baghdad correspondent, thank you. Andrew North is a BBC correspondent in Baghdad. Thank you to you also. So we see what the next development is. We see if it goes through Parliament. And then, of course, there's the question of the new administration, the Barack Obama administration, which takes over in January, and they're going to be stuck with whatever the deal that's made.
Exactly. And there was also some talk that they might have softened any Iranian opposition to this deal. It's going to be interesting.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.